And specifically, one of the things that that Gaius was doing and others in the church were doing and trying to do was to welcome those who were traveling through, probably having a lot to do with missionaries, with those who were traveling, preaching the word, teaching the word to others, and so forth, traveling through, and the church there welcoming them, and doing what they should have been doing as a church. And then there is Diotrephes, who had imposed himself and his desires and leadership upon the church there, and was opposing those who were doing the things that Gaius and the others were trying to do. And so basically what we have is an example of these two kinds of wisdom, wisdom that is from God and wisdom that is not, and what the end result of those two kinds of wisdom really are. And James makes this contrast as he continues in this letter and talks about two kinds of people in this context that he is writing about that has a lot to do with problems or strife within the church. In this section that begins in chapter 3, verse 1, and goes all the way through chapter 4, and verse 12, James has a lot to say about the topic of disorder and disunity and strife and so forth within the church. And so what he's doing is connecting these things he's getting ready to talk about to the things that he has already talked about, and as we've been seeing all along there. So in other words, just to reemphasize the idea that what James is writing here is not just a series of kind of random thoughts on different topics or issues, but he's writing all these things are connected and they're all being built upon one on the other. If you begin looking here in verse 13 of chapter 3, he asks the question, who is wise and understanding among you? Okay? Who are the wise ones that are among you? How does one, in other words, show that they are a wise person? Okay? Well, he tells us the answer to that question too, doesn't he? If you are truly full of wisdom, then it will be shown by what? By your life, by your actions, right? It'll be shown by the way that you do things and what you do, by the deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Now, what does that have to do with anything at all that he's talked about before? In the previous part of this letter. What? Not only the tongue, but also, didn't he talk a lot about faith and deeds? You see? So here again is that connection. You know, previously he's talking about those who will say, you know, hey, I've got faith, that's all I need. And you're saved by your faith. And he countered that with what? Show me your faith. I will show you my faith by what I do. You see? And here he's talking about our deeds that we do. How is wisdom shown to other people? In part by what we do. Not just what we say, not just what we think. You see? We tend to think of wisdom as all, you know, up here in the head. Okay? The wise old owl sitting on the tree, right? Dispensing words of wisdom. But James says, we can see that wisdom in the deeds of people. Okay? So, doesn't it make sense then to connect our wisdom to our actions? A person can claim a lot of things, just like we talked about earlier. You're claiming to have faith, but where's your faith? How are you proving that faith? It's not by what you claim, but it's by what you do. The same thing is true of wisdom. A person can claim to be wise, but you show that wisdom by what you do, not by what you say. Judy?
I just kind of think that he's not talking here about earthly wisdom. He's talking about a godly wisdom.
Okay, right. And he's going to make that distinction here as we go down through that. Okay? So you know, hang on to this and look at what he's going to make a contrast between these two. Okay? Look at what he says beginning in verse 14. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Okay? Again, where's that connected to? That boasting previously that he was talking about the faith that you have and so forth. Okay? Don't deny the truth. What was the truth that they were denying? That they actually had to do anything with their faith. You see? Don't deny the truth with it. And again, Judy, what does he say here? What does he do? He identifies what kind of wisdom that is. When folks are living that way, in other words, when they are when they're full of selfish ambition and envy, they have that in their hearts, when they're denying the truth, he says that wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and of the devil. That's the source of that kind of wisdom. Ray, did you have a comment?
No.
Okay. So, you know, he's talking about and he's contrasting these two different sources of wisdom. Okay? Where does the wisdom come from? It's not, and I'm not sure if source is necessarily the same thing as kind. Okay? The kind of wisdom we have, it basically is going to come from and depend upon the source. Where does it come from? Okay? And he's identifying this first kind of wisdom as basically it comes from the devil. So it's not just earthly wisdom or, you know, as we kind of think it's men's wisdom. He goes beyond it being man's wisdom, doesn't he? Says the source of this wisdom is the devil. Okay? It's evil is what it is. Right? It is unspiritual. It is of the devil. It comes from this the envy and the selfish ambition that one has within his or her heart. And the results, look at verse 16, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find what? Yeah. You find, first of all, disorder. Okay? And so there's chaos, there's you know, it's just a mess. And not only is that, you know, what's going on there, but you also find every, what does he call it? Every evil practice. Okay? And why is that so? Because the source of this kind of wisdom is what? It's the devil, okay? So one shouldn't expect then to find anything else but evil out of that kind of wisdom. Okay? Everybody with me so far? Okay, hang on. Watch your toes. Okay? Who is he addressing here? Yeah, he's addressing the church. Okay? Now, that's the one side. That's the one source of wisdom and the results of that kind of wisdom. Contrast that with the wisdom that comes from heaven. All right? And what are the characteristics of that source of wisdom? Okay. First of all, it is pure, he says, right? What is purity? Think about it in terms of wisdom. How would wisdom, you know, what is purity? And how is that affected here by this kind of wisdom?
That is malice of your heart.
Yeah. Where was the other stuff coming from? That envy and selfish ambition was harbored where? Now, it's harbored, he said, in the heart. okay? And so this heavenly wisdom, it's pure. It comes from a pure heart. See? All right? Okay? It is also peace-loving. Okay? As opposed to contentiousness, like that of Diotrephes. Okay? Again, someone in the church who is having, you know, this wisdom that doesn't come from above, but rather is of the devil, and the result of that, as he says, is strife. Okay? But again, the contrast of that is that this heavenly wisdom is peace-loving. Okay? Right? Yes, he was. And there are many who are in the church today, leaders in the church today, who should feel that same fear. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But, you know, again, there's this contrast between, you know, those who are causing problems and, you know, stirring up contention and strife and that kind of thing versus those who are peace-loving. Okay? He says it's also, they are considerate. Considerate of what? Or who? Yeah, others. Okay? Considerate of others. Which is a direct contrast to what? What did he say about the other? One of the characteristics of the other kinds of wisdom was what? Selfish ambition. You see? This is not selfishness. This is being considerate of others. And not only considerate, but the next thing he says is, it's what? It's submissive. Okay. So we're looking at opposite ends of the spectrum, so to speak, here, aren't we? In terms of these two sources of wisdom here. Okay? He says it is full of mercy. Okay? One of the things that lacks... That lacks in the kind of wisdom or the source of wisdom that comes from the devil, because the devil lacks this, is mercy, isn't it? That's one of the great contrasts between God, who is full of grace and mercy, and the devil, who is void of it completely. So, doesn't it make sense then that when the source of wisdom is the devil, as James has said here, then that wisdom is going to be void of any mercy shown to other people. But when that wisdom, the source of the wisdom, is from heaven, then mercy is going to be one of the characteristics of that wisdom.
Russ, the King James Version, back up one verse.
Okay. Okay.
And that willing to yield doesn't mean that you give up on the principle, but you're willing to yield to contention to avoid contention.
Right. Okay, right. Or submissiveness is the word there. Yeah, same thing. Absolutely. And if you think about it, and I like that word, it's a word that I don't think we really pay a whole lot of attention to, especially when we're driving, that yield. Okay? What does that mean? Right. Okay. Right. And so what? I'm still going to be going the way that I need to go when I yield to somebody on the highway, right? But I recognize that, you know, they have the right of way, and I'm going to stop if I have to and let them go. Rather than, as you see so many people out here doing all the time, they don't pay any attention to a yield sign, you see. Especially on the interstate ramps and all, they just come right on out and, you know, they expect everybody to stop for them. You know, you got to get off at the exit, and that's your problem, not theirs. They got to get on, you see. And so they don't pay any attention to that. And that's, you know, this idea of yielding to someone else. I'm still going to go in the direction. So, yeah, I'm you know, I'm not going to change what I'm doing in the sense of going the direction somebody else wants me to go in, but I'm not going to insist that I be first and that I have to have my way and so forth. You see, I'm able to yield to other people. Yeah. So, absolutely. Any other thoughts? Good comment there. Okay. You never know what you're dealing with. But again, you know, the bottom line is, where does that kind of an attitude come from? That selfish ambition. You see, I'm not willing to submit or yield to someone else because I want my way. You see? And I put myself first. And so, again, a tremendous contrast between these two sources of wisdom that James is showing us. So, again, you're not going to find mercy in the wisdom that comes from the devil. You're going to find mercy from the wisdom that comes from God. Okay, and also, good fruit is another characteristic of this kind of wisdom, or this source of wisdom comes from God. What kind of fruit, first of all, should we be thinking of when he talks about good fruit? Yeah, the fruit of the Spirit. Say again, is that other wisdom, that comes from the devil, is it going to have any of that fruit in it? No. Because the source of that fruit is the Spirit. It's the fruit of the Spirit. Okay? So the only place you're going to get that fruit from is from the wisdom that comes from God. All right? And then here's another impartial. This kind of wisdom is impartial. We see another connection here to what he's already talked about in the previous chapters here, talking about how we as Christians are supposed to be impartial. Okay, remember what he had to say about the two visitors that come to the assembly and how we treat one over the other? And he condemned that whole showing of partiality to some. And this wisdom from God won't allow us to be that way, you see, to show that partiality. It will cause us to be impartial, to treat people fairly and rightly. You see. That's wisdom from God. And it is also sincere. Okay? What good are any of these other qualities if they don't come out of sincerity?
In other words, if we don't really mean it.
Yeah. You know, you can you can pretend and you can do, go through the motions of some of these things, all right? But if it's not sincere, then it's worthless. And isn't that really what Jesus, you know, as he dealt with the religious leaders of his day over and over again, isn't that really part of what he was saying to them? You know, these people, he says, well, did Esaias or Isaiah say of these people, they do what? They honor me with their lips, but what? Their hearts are far from me. They're not sincere in what they're doing. They're following the rules. They're going through all the motions, but their hearts aren't in it. So therefore, it is worthless. So even if we're doing all of these things, you see, but if it's not sincere, we're trying to pretend like this is what we're doing, but we're not sincere, that's not from God. See? That kind of wisdom doesn't come from God, it comes from the devil. Okay, Ray?
Literally, you're sitting in that spot that you were sitting. Come on, we're saying that to you.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not
what
I heard.
I know.
I
know.
And,
it's my seat.
Yeah. Your seat behind you, but you need to understand, you need to learn to have some, learn to love enough. Well, maybe next time I'll give you a little bit of that.
Yeah.
That's not
where
you be. Yeah. You know, but I've seen it in church.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to work on that attitude if we expect to be Christ-like.
Yeah.
I got a problem with that.
Oh, there are some.
I will get up and move myself easily. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some churches. I'm not sure if it's still going on. I can't really say. But throughout history, you can go to some of these old churches. And somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I hadn't been there in a long, long time, but I think St. John's Church down in Richmond has it. But some of these old churches used to be, they'd have your name on the edge of the pew there, because you contributed so much to the church or what have you, that's your seat. So you get your own seat and so forth. Yeah. Exactly, and that's what he's urging us as he gets ready to talk about some really tough stuff here that he's getting ready to lay on the church. Going into this discussion, we need to make sure that we're looking at everything from godly wisdom, not from worldly wisdom. See? Because again, the source of that wisdom is going to depend on the outcome of many, many things. Okay, Judy, and then Gary over here.
I think if you use your godly wisdom and you're doing all of these things, and you do that with all sincerity, you get a twofold blessing. Not only do you bless somebody else, but you yourself. God or with an inner peace. There's always, always a blessing for the one
that's doing it,
right? Yeah,
absolutely.
As well as for the other ones.
You're right. Sure.
Let's bring this particular verse back down to where we are today in the Lord's Supper.
Okay.
It is critical, it's imperative, as we partake or participate in the Lord's Supper, that we concentrate and fully try to relate to the sacrifice of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Because if we don't, and I'm afraid the way we do it so many times it comes rote, that we eat and drink condemnation to our soul. We're told that.
Yeah.
And to let our minds wander at that particular time, or to let persons think of it in that way, we will not answer for that one day.
Right.
If there's one time, it should be the whole time, but if there's one time in the service that we try desperately, and God would help us if we try, to get rid of the world, to concentrate on the love of His Son, and the sacrifice that God made and Jesus made, because they loved us. That's the time to put the hypocrisy out and go do these things routinely and don't really mean it. I strive to think of Christ suffering on the cross. And I don't always do that. But I strive to do that. And, but I have gotten an occasion, gotten just going through it. And not really thinking of it. But really, really not doing it.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, he talks about this sincerity, and that's with everything that we do. If we're doing these things, but our heart's not right, it's not in it, then, you know, as far as God is concerned, you may as well not even be doing it, because He's not accepting it, you see? And I agree with you on the communion, but I would take it a step further and say I think that begins with our whole attitude of sincere worship. Why are we coming together to begin with, you see? And do we have a sincere heart to come and to worship God, or are we just here because, well, it's Sunday and we're supposed to come to church? See, if that's how we're doing it, then you know, I think there's that sincerity oftentimes is lacking, and so then that carries over, I think, into all the other aspects of it. Whether we're talking about singing, you know, well, we're singing, but if our heart's not in it and we're not sincere about it, then, you know, it's just words. And how often do we sing the words of a song and we're not even paying attention to what those words are saying because our heart's just not into it at all, see? And it's not about coming to church, you know, to listen to somebody tell us. It's about worshiping God first and foremost. That's the primary reason that we gather, is to worship God. And if that's not why we're gathering first and foremost, then, as you heard me say, you know, last week, stay home. Okay? If that's not what it's about, then don't bother. Don't insult God that way. And that's what's happening so often, you see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
again, sincerity is a major key in it. Absolutely. And that's
you're not doing too good. You're doing that good
to help others and to lift others up. Exactly. And that's the secondary part of what worship is all about. It's primarily to come to praise and honor God. And secondly, it's that the brethren come together to uplift and encourage one another. See? But you know, it's not about what I get out of it in the sense of, well, I don't get anything out of it, so what's the point of going? Not about you in that regard. It's about praising and honoring God first and foremost. And then about, let's say, lifting up other people. Tim?
When you get to a point when you start thinking about that, it's that exact moment when you need to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Now, again, as we've been saying all along, these thoughts of James are not just random thoughts that he's throwing out there and so forth. They're all connected. So one of the difficulties I think sometimes that we have as we read through the Bible is that we come to these chapter breaks. Okay? And we kind of tend to look at these chapter breaks as, oh, it's a new thought that's starting. Like we do, you know, when writing, you know, we have a new paragraph and so it's a new thought. Well, it may be a new thought, or it may just be a continuation or extension of what's already been said, okay? So, you know, here's a perfect example of how these chapter breaks sometimes can cause us to miss some important things. You have to keep in mind that the chapter breaks, the numbers of the different chapters throughout the Bible, and the verses, okay, the numbers of all the verses, those were put there. You know, I don't even remember now. I'd have to go back and look at it. Those were put there a couple of centuries after the Bible was completed, okay? And they were put there really only for the ability and the convenience to find things in the Bible quickly. All right? So somebody could say, well, go over to James chapter 4, verse 1, rather than going somewhere in James's letter. It's in that letter somewhere, because all you have is just this expansive writing of material. So, you know, the chapters and the verses that are in there were put in there for that ability to be able to kind of break it down into, you know, smaller parts. But that's all they're for. But sometimes those breaks in the chapters and so forth kind of interfere with the flow of the thought of the original author here. And I think this can be an example of that. Because look at what James says next here, verse 18. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. Okay? Now, he's been talking about wisdom that comes from above, right? And certainly that's a characteristic, would you agree, of wisdom that comes from above. That is, of being a peacemaker. Okay? But as we continue moving on down, what is the very next thing that he says? In other words, it's almost like verse 18 should be actually verse 1 of chapter 4. Okay? Because what does he say the very next thing? Yeah. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. But what causes fights and quarrels among you? You see, he's getting ready to talk about dissension and strife and problems within the church. Okay? But he needs his audience, and right now that's we-ins, right? Us-ins, you guys, okay? What he needs for us to understand is before he really gets into the meat of talking about this problem of strife in the church, that we need to approach it with godly wisdom. Because if we don't, then most likely what's going to happen? It's going to cause more problems than might already be there, you see. If you approach it from, you know, this wisdom that comes from the devil, it's just going to wreak more problems. But if you approach these issues from godly wisdom, you see, with a heart at being a peacemaker, someone who is desiring to sow peace, then you can resolve whatever conflicts and whatever strife and problems that may be existing there. So you see how these things are connected, that he's writing here, and he's leading from one thing to the next, you see, to help us to understand what our responsibility is as God's people, and the way that we are living our life, not just what we're claiming, say, and not just what we say we believe or that we are believers, but how we are actually living our life. Okay? And one of the most important areas of that is the daily life of the church, you say, and whether what we claim and what we say is actually what we are doing. Okay? Do those two things match? Or are they very, very different? So from here, James is getting ready to move on to this discussion that is very specifically about strife within the church. Okay? Before we get into looking at that part, let's talk about three different suggestions. And these suggestions come from Tommy in his book that we've been using with this. Three suggestions for keeping peace in the church. Okay, Ray, did you have a comment? Did I see your hand up? Right. Yeah, I do too. It makes it real convenient for finding what we need. Absolutely. Okay, real quickly here, before we run out of time, let's talk about three suggestions for keeping peace in the church. The first one is, don't be surprised at the presence of Diotrephes in the church. Okay? Don't be surprised that there are people like that in the church. We say, well, wait a minute. We shouldn't have people like that in the church. Well, we shouldn't, but we do. Okay? Because the church is made up of people. Okay? It's made up of people. And people aren't always going to be what they should be. All right? And I will add to that particular suggestion by Tommy to say this. Don't be surprised, okay, that some of those Diotrephes in the church are the church leaders. In fact, in my experience, that's where most of them are. Okay? And we shouldn't be surprised at that. Now, you know, we say we shouldn't be surprised at that. Why shouldn't we be surprised? Well, I think that the primary reason is we have to understand this is God's family, right? And the primary work of Satan is to disrupt and corrupt God's family. So why wouldn't Satan be attacking God's family? And to do it, the most effective way to destroy family is through the leadership. Okay, so don't be surprised at the presence of Diotrephes in the church. Secondly, those motivated by false wisdom should not be ignored, okay, or allowed to do their evil work. Okay, so in other words, you know, when we know we've got somebody, when we know we've got a Diotrephes, we can't just go, well, just ignore them. They're just, you know, don't pay any attention to them. No, we can't do that. Because they're going to be working and wreaking destruction one way or another in the church. And they can't be ignored. All right? Neither can they be allowed to do the things that they want to do. So it's one of those situations where you can't just ignore it hoping that they'll go away. You got to deal with it. You see? Because it won't go away, it will just continue to wreak havoc and cause problems. And then the third suggestion is each of us must choose, and emphasize the word choose, to live by the right kind of wisdom. The choice that we make. Okay? Where am I going to go as my source of wisdom? See? It's a choice that we have to actively make.
Our only chance of changing the Diotrephes is to confront the Diotrephes.
That's right.
Otherwise, they'll never change.
You've got to do that.
I think we have to confront these people because they can destroy them.
They can. And they have, and they continue to do so. Okay, let me encourage you to read in first part of chapter 4. For next week, we're going to begin talking about the three-level war. Okay? The presence of strife in the church. All right? Thank you all very much.